Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of a Dice Tradecast on Roto-Viz Radio. Today, it's one of those things that every single time we start a show, if it's Eric always does the same intro. If it's me, I always do the same intro, basically saying that I'm not Eric. So basically, we're a broken record with whatever our intro is. But it's me, Nathan. I'm here today. And because a solo podcast would make you want to tear your ears out, I am joined by my good friend, Ryan McDowell. How's it going tonight, Ryan?
It is going well. Glad to be back on with, I was going to say you guys, but it's just you, Nathan.
Yeah, it's just us. It's a nice intimate podcast scenario tonight, but I definitely appreciate that you can save the day. For once, we actually scheduled a guest a couple of days in advance, and then it was our host that ended up having to back out.
Those guys, we can't count on them. But Nathan, if we had waited a week, we could have done this live in the same room. I'll be down your way very soon.
There you go. I'm excited about that. So as you know, Dice Tradecast is brought to you by MyFFPC. I want everyone to know that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL Pass through the NFL Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our NFL content, and it also supports the pod. You can contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and on Twitter, @RotoVizRadio. RotoViz Radio and its fantastic collection of podcasts are now available on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. You can find us along with the rest of the RotoViz shows under RotoViz Radio. And we also have our individual feed for just this show. Simply search Dynasty Tradecast, a RotoViz FF podcast, on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. Click subscribe and leave us a rating and review. All righty. So let's get into our topics for today. Basically, we're going to have a couple of news and notes. And because Eric didn't show up, I was like, you know what? Eric always hates when we talk Devi because he doesn't know anything about Devi. So it's just me and you, Ryan. We can talk some Devi. So we're going to talk some Devi strategy and then an addition of Devi or the Vet as we wrap up the show. All righty. Here we go. First topic of the day. This is the one that blew up the Twitter. And I feel like we've seen this topic like October of last year, and then it like dwindled, and then it happened again, and this is now June, I believe, if I get my months correctly, in the summer. Andrew Luck, he threw a football today. Are you excited about that?
No. It doesn't – I don't know. Maybe it makes me feel a little bit better, but for people to act comfortable or to feel comfortable about where he's at this point is – they're just lying to themselves, or maybe they're lying to us. I mean, it's great that he has a minimal level of progress, but to me, he's – still not a sure thing to play at all in 2018, because I just don't believe anything that the Colts say at this point. And he's certainly not a lock to be ready at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. At this point, I kind of see Andrew Luck, and obviously I think his price kind of raised a little bit today, but in the last month or two, Andrew Luck and his price kind of look like a year or two from now, we're going to look at like, oh my God, why didn't I buy all the Andrew Luck in April of 2018? Or, wow, I can't believe I bought all that Andrew Luck in April of 2018 because he never did anything ever again. So I think that either way, there's going to be egg on the faces of somebody here. And honestly, I'm kind of on both sides of the fence. I'm going to try and, you know, acquire when it's super cheap, and I'm trying to sell off when I can get any sort of decent value. Just to throw into some anecdotal evidence into this conversation, in a recent startup, a best ball superflex startup, I got Andrew Luck at 408. What are your thoughts on that price?
Yeah, I think that's the point. And in a super flex league, for sure, we know how hard it is to get really any starting quarterback, let alone one who's put up numbers like Luck has. So that's a spot where I would be willing to gamble that he does come back and play at a high level. But there, I mean, in general, there are so many unanswered questions with this injury. And not only will he come back, but how well will he perform? How strong is that arm? And then you've got to consider the offense around him, because right now it's looking pretty ugly.
Yeah, and on the flip side of that coin, I sold him in a one QB league recently. And this is one of those things that it's a lot easier to sell, or at least, you know, stomach selling Andrew Luck in a one QB league right now, because even if he does return to form, the odds are you didn't actually, like, you know, just give him away for free. Like in my scenario, in an auction, rookie auction league, I traded away Luck for Trubisky, a second and a third. So yes, if Luck turns back into Luck, that's an undersell. But I think that that stomachs the risk of that, as well as, you know, just gives me a decent floor with the fact that Luck could still never return to form. So I guess thoughts on that deal. And is there any difference between your risk assessment in one QB versus Superflex and Luck?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with what you said. And in general, it's just so easy to find a quarterback in a one QB league, even if you want to go with one of those veterans, and there's plenty of those at this point. I would be much more likely to sell in a one quarterback league at this point. But I like the value you got there. I mean, a lot of people are pegging Trubisky for a breakout season as he heads into year two, and to get a couple draft picks. I think you did well with that one. One thing I'm seeing kind of a disconnect with when it comes to Luck and his value is ADP, or whether it's ADP like that we have at DLF, where he is still being drafted as a top 10 quarterback, or actual startup drafts. I'm in a startup auction right now, and he's looks like he's basically being valued again as the top 10 quarterback still. But then when it comes to his trade value in existing leagues, that's where I really see a difference. Maybe people have a different mindset when they're building a team from scratch versus potentially trading for him.
Well, certainly in a league that's been around for a few years, you've pretty much gotten nothing from Luck for 2 years. So you're more willing to, people who are impatient are more willing to say, all right, this guy's giving me nothing for 2 years. I'll trade him off, even if it's for below market value or below what they think they should accept for him. I guess while we're talking Luck, and this is their weapons are pretty barren. I believe they have Ryan Grant to go with T.Y. Hilton and Jack Doyle at tight end. Do you have worries about Luck? I mean, about Hilton long term, or is you think he's fine regardless? And then if Luck's health works out, it's more of just a bonus for Hilton.
Yeah, I'm pretty concerned with Hilton based on what we saw last year. Now, I mean, if Luck comes back, and hopefully we can just throw this conversation out the window, because I'm as worried as I am, I'm hopeful, and I'm certainly pulling for him. I think he's shown he's one of the best quarterbacks that we've seen in some time, and you hate to see that talent wasted or cut short with an injury. But if he doesn't come back, or if he proves that he's not full strength, not back to 100%, then I think we have to be worried about Hilton. He had a couple splash games last year, but in general, he was not even a fantasy starter for much of the season.
Yeah, and that certainly can be frustrating, because, you know, and this is a case for basketball, I guess, but it's one of those scenarios where, you know, you got the, like, six straight weeks of, like, 8 points or less, and then when he has the 30-point game, it's like, well, damn, I just benched him this week. So
yep. It's
certainly a frustration you can have in the seasonal format.
Sorry, that was my guy Amari Cooper last year, too. He had really same thing.
Yeah, but Amari's going to bounce back. Hashtag anything
yes.
for Amari.
Yes, that's right.
All right, let's move on to a couple of Patriots news. The first one's going to be the more concrete, and that's the Edelman suspension suspended for the first four games of the season, performance-enhancing drugs. Now, Julian Edelman didn't really have any dynasty value to begin with. Yes, he had some, okay, he's a nice, like, you know, win-now piece of guy. You can have a secure wide receiver three, wide receiver four. But I guess the question more so is, how does this affect the dynasty value of the pieces around him? And or if you disagree with me, do you think that this has any sort of large impact on his value?
No, I actually agree with you. I mean, I think he's a guy, obviously he has roster value and in general still worthy of a start on a weekly basis in that offense. But losing him for four games, he's 32 years old. Four games is not going to impact his dynasty value much. If you find that it does, then you should buy him, especially if you're a contender. But the pieces around him, that's really an interesting question, because it's just always so hard to figure out what the Patriots are going to do. Chris Hogan is, I think, being viewed as the main beneficiary of that. And you would think it would be him. I mean, we see some of these other young receivers or these guys that they've taken a chance on, kind of picked up the off the scrap heap, like Jordan Matthews and Kenny Britt, guys like that, Philip Dorsett. They're just taking the cast offs from around the NFL, and that usually works well for the Patriots. So I have no idea which one of those cast offs will turn into something. We've seen some predictions lately that Matthews wouldn't even make the final roster, make the team this year. So he would be my choice, but I don't follow the team like some of these beat writers, and they're the ones making that prediction.
Yeah, it was Tommy Curran who had a 53-man roster prediction and left, I believe, both Matthews and Dorsett out of the picture. But I also believe that was right before the Edelman news. So as the Matthews optimist, I'm going to say that this suspension news is good news for Matthews, because I think that, you know, Brady and Belichick want to have some veteran receivers that they think they can trust, and I think that Matthews fills that role. And people who are talking about Hogan, I honestly think that once Edelman gets back, I think it's the Edelman and Matthews show. I think Matthews plays the Hogan role better than Hogan does. I'm not some sort of tape grinder, but I do think he's better at short yardage and guys who can, you know. Also, I've been a Matthews fan pretty much his entire career, until he got to Buffalo, it was a good thing for fantasy. So we'll see how things play out with Matthews. Obviously, none of these guys have a promising like future long term situation, because Brady will retire in the next year or two. But obviously, that may be looking too far ahead. When you're talking about guys that are being taken in the 11th, 12th, later round of startups, I'm not too worried about what they're going to be doing 2-3 years from now. I'm more so worried about the early rounds of when those guys are going to be, you know, relevant, you know, down the road. But when it comes to the 11th to 20th round, even when I'm going like a win now type perspective, I'm fine taking guys that I don't see as long term as I see them as guys that I can sell at the deadline, or even, you know, try and help me win year one.
Yeah, I agree. And the Patriots are a weird team because obviously from an NFL perspective, they're the best team around as far as their success over, I mean, really, Nathan, over your entire lifetime. It's true, though. I mean,
you're right. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, the history of Brady and Belichick, and I mean, we've seen the Eagles as the reigning Super Bowl champs, but in general, the Patriots are still sitting atop the NFL on a year-to-year basis. But then when you take that dynasty perspective, I was looking at this recently, looking at our DLF ADP. They only have three players inside the top 100. So of course you have Gronkowski, you've got Sony Michel, who has some value as the new guy in town. But overall, this is not a team that has a lot of valuable dynasty assets overall.
Yeah, and that's certainly to the point where, and we've seen them hesitant to invest at wide receiver in NFL drafts, not rookie drafts, of course. But I could see, because they have such like a mess wide receiver of, you know, guys that are NFL players that don't quite become like NFL studs. And they might learn pretty quickly that when they don't have Tom Brady, that you can't just throw out the Philip Dorsett's the world and expect to make Super Bowls. All right, let's move on to our last Patriots bit, and we can just go over this quickly because I don't think it has much dynasty relevance, but Friday afternoon, so pretty much a week ago when you're listening to this, there was the Gronk circulation of will he get traded to the Titans, will he get traded to the Niners, will he get traded at all, and it seemed like it was imminent, and then it kind of just got kiboshed. Were you buying into the Gronk rumors at all? Do you think that it's still a possibility, or do you think it's more of more smoke and mirrors from fantasy Twitter or NFL Twitter?
Yeah, I was totally buying in because – And I was excited. Like, I was ready for it. I was actually sitting in a movie when this news kind of started breaking. And instead of watching the movie, I was just scrolling through my phone and through Twitter and trying to keep up with these updates. And it wasn't just one guy who dropped a random rumor. There seemed to be multiple, again, beat writers, reporters, team sources who expected
bloggers
right who expected some type of major news, and then I guess people put two and two together and thought maybe that it was Gronkowski being traded. Who knows what really is the truth at this point? I don't think the Saints were mentioned, so I guess if he were to be traded to the Saints, maybe we wouldn't see much of a downgrade in his value, but in general, we don't want him. We don't want him on another roster as far as his fantasy and dynasty value goes.
Yeah, I don't think. I think that Gronk's the type of guy that he's situation agnostic. He's not going to have a huge impact and change in value, no matter whether his quarterback is, you know, Marcus Mariota, Jimmy Garoppolo, or Tom Brady. Like, if he's any of those guys' tight end, he's going to be a top five tight end in fantasy. He's going to, you know, be one of the most targeted tight ends in the NFL. So, I mean, Gronk, the question is more so how many years or even year is he going to play, more so than what team is he going to play for, which it's probably just going to be the Patriots, because, you know, so often when we hear like these rumors, or, you know, we try and predict predicting NFL trades is one of the biggest wastes of time ever, because 99.9% of the time NFL trades don't happen.
We have seen more lately, though, over the past year or two, and that has that's made things fun. You know, in a lot of sports, and maybe we could include NFL in this. I definitely feel this way about NBA and baseball. The offseason's the best part, right? The trades and the drafts and all the transactions and free agency. That part is the most enjoyable part, and that's kind of why we love playing Dynasty.
Yeah, for sure. And the more, and obviously we've talked about your kitchen sink leagues plenty, but the more you can incorporate the offseason into your Dynasty league, the better, whether it's through, you know, a contract league or through Devy. The more things that you can get going on in the offseason, A, it's just more fun to do those things, but also the fact that when you force people to log into the league page rather than just, you know, the random login every week that people do, when there's actual real reasons to log in, more trades happen. All right, let's move on to some bit of Devy strategery. We're going to first start out with more of a broad scope, and then we'll go more specific with our game with Devy or the Vet. But just to start us off, one of the things that I think is one of the more intriguing discussions with Devy, and that is quantity versus quality. I know that this may be a bit of a broad question, but in your sense, would you rather go for those top-tier guys if it sacrifices multiple Devy players, or are you more on the side of let's just get as many chips on the table as possible?
I think I've kind of gone back and forth with this, and we've seen, you know, if it's in kitchen sink leagues or it's really just a growing, I guess, subset of dynasty leagues, not only Devy leagues, but auction leagues involving Devy auctions, which are just fantastic. We love them, Nathan. So I've kind of flipped back and forth between quantity and quality. And I think in general, it's just so tough to predict what these college players are going to do, how they're going to transition to the NFL. So if you're looking at a player pool that's relatively limited, like in kitchen sink, we're adding 36 players per year. And of course that overlaps at some time. I think I would side with the quality. If I can get five or six of these guys, but they're the last five or six of the group versus the one guy at the top, I feel like I have a better chance there.
See, for me, I'm more on the side of quantity simply because I'd rather have multiple shots in reference kitchen sink. And with the kitchen sink format, you can get dollar players, you know, just by having a Devy spot and having a dollar that guarantees you a player. And I've had very mixed success with it, but in years I've gotten N'Keal Harry for a dollar. I've gotten Sony Michel for a dollar. I've also gotten Nate Craig Myers and Kyle Davis and Simi Cobbs for a dollar. All those guys don't matter. So for me, I'm not as confident in my ability to scout Devy players that I'm not going to risk busting on the top guy, and I'll take multiple shots at, you know, the guys in like the 20 to 25 or 20 to 30 range. And if one turns into Sony Michel or two turn into, you know, top 15 to 20 players as far as rookie and Devy, then that's certainly, you know, a win in my book. And so it's one of those things that I'll stomach the losses of the, you know, dollar Kyle Davis and Nate Craig Myers that never turn into anything, because I think that there's a large number of dollar guys that also are going to, you know, blossom into guys that should be valued more towards that top of the tier.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to view it. And not everybody is playing in a Devy auction league. Most people are still drafting those players, but the transition would be if you're picking in the first half of the round, maybe if you're doing just a one round or two round Devy draft, then moving down and consolidating not consolidating, but spreading those picks out, I guess, getting multiple later picks for your one high pick might be the way to go.
Yeah, and there's certainly risk involved in that, because while N'Keal Harry entering the college was a dollar player, now he's your top billing, top dollar player. And if he turns into a Dez, a Julio, you know, selling him for, you know, the 111 and 112 in your Devy draft probably isn't going to work out for you unless you're 112, one of those two, you know, hits more towards that top end. So there's certainly risks on both sides. There's the risk of a complete bust with the top end guy, while there's the risk of, you know, you're just not getting, you know, the thoroughbred type prospect when you're going towards the lower end of things. All right, this is going to be another one that highly debated in the Devy sphere. And that's more talented versus quicker to the NFL. So basically the scenario here is, do you take the sophomore who is guys entering his sophomore year that you think is, you know, a top five Devy player? Or do you take the guy who's entering his junior year who you think is a top 10 to 12 guy?
Yeah, it's so tough to find that balance. In general, I find myself leaning more towards the players that I can use the quickest. So those upperclassmen versus the young guys that I might have to wait a couple extra years on. But some of these players, I mean, we saw this freshman running back class last year, the wide receiver class 2 years ago. They're just so talented that you do have to find that balance, and it really becomes kind of a situational, you know, player by player decision. But in general, if I feel like the talent is anywhere close, then obviously I want the guy who's going to be on my roster sooner.
Yeah, and I also think that it depends on how many Devys are entering your league each year. So we have delayed dynasty where we have 10 enter each year, and slightly out of laziness with like searching the player pool, but also just out of pure upside, I take freshmen every single year in that league because for the most part, the guys who are, you know, actually good got taken in early years when they were a freshman or a sophomore. Rarely are there guys entering their junior year that are legitimate prospects available in a league that deep. So basically the deeper you go, the more willing I am to invest in that earlier player pool, because I'm just kind of investing in the upside there. When it's a one or two round Devy draft, I see that's much less of a problem, where I'm fine investing in sophomores or juniors, you know, kind of just evaluating the talent. But for the most part, I tend to, if I have to wait a year to get the more talented player, I'm usually fine doing that unless I kind of see the guy. Like, it's one of those things that if I see a guy who's a junior and I think, okay, this guy's going to be a first round NFL draft pick, it's hard to really beat that. Like, you know, 2 years out, there's so many things that can happen to that sophomore. They could, you know, perform not as well. They could have a bad combine. There's so many things that can happen that I'm fine opting with the guy that has less obstacles in his way and who's only 1 year instead of 2 years. All right, let's move on to our next one. And this is one that I think that a lot of people struggle with, and that's do seniors lack upside? This is kind of a random anecdote here, but I remember being in a Devy draft. It was a two-round Devy draft league where Devontae Parker was available entering his senior year. And pretty much everyone was avoiding him, not because they didn't like him as a player, but because they were like, well, he's a senior, so there must be something wrong with him. There must be a reason why he didn't enter the NFL after his junior year. And the success rate of Parker to this date, you know, that doesn't have much to do with this discussion. But what is your opinion on seniors? Do you kind of downgrade a guy if they're for some reason still available in a Devy league and they're entering their senior season? Do you kind of raise an eyebrow like, hey, maybe you're not that good because you didn't enter the NFL?
I don't necessarily do that intentionally, and I'm not sure that anybody does or at least would admit to it. But I think there's definitely like a bias in the back of our mind because and I've written about this before, but dynasty owners, especially the ones who play Devy, we just assume that every junior is going to declare. And obviously that doesn't happen. And even the past couple of years, we've seen some surprise decisions with guys like Nick Chubb going back to school for his senior year, Bryce Love this year, and Cortland Sutton went back for an additional year. There's tons of examples over the past couple of years, especially. I have kind of informally studied the Devy value of these players before they I guess, opt to return to school and after. And it does seem like there is a hit to their value. And maybe I guess it is just that perception that maybe they weren't good enough to declare for the draft, or this guy's not as good as we thought he was because he wasn't able to leave after 3 years. And then part of it probably just has to do with, it's another year I have to wait. You were expecting to add this guy to your main dynasty team, and now it's another year to, you know, sit with him on the taxi squad, or just to carry that spot that is not really going to help you.
Yeah, one example recently was actually Corey Davis, where I remember Fantasy Twitter and Dynasty Twitter was absolutely in love with Corey Davis after his junior year and saying, okay, this guy's going to be a top Dynasty rookie pick. And then then he stays in college for his senior year. And I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe the NFL doesn't like him as much as we do. And that's where I kind of had a cause for concern, like, okay, maybe he's just not going to go as high in the NFL draft, which will hurt his, you know, early targets and things of that nature. But I was wrong. Obviously, he stayed for a senior year, had another amazing year in his senior year, and then he got picked fifth overall in the NFL draft. So sometimes staying for the senior year doesn't really guarantee that the NFL doesn't like you. And I mean, these are human beings. Maybe they just wanted to finish up school. Maybe they enjoyed college. Like, I mean, it's one of those things that it's hard to really quantify. But Corey Davis staying for his senior year didn't have any, like, it didn't hurt his dynasty or didn't hurt his NFL value at all.
No, and it is just one of those things that really we should probably be taking advantage of it, right? I mean, there's guys this year, I believe his name's escaping me. I think it's David Sills, West Virginia wide receiver. He was a player that a lot of people thought might come out and be part of this class, and of course he went back to school.
With Will Greer.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, those guys are going to put up big numbers, just as we saw with like Rudolph and Washington this year. A year ago, they both opted to go back to school and put up huge numbers and you know, potentially help their stock. That's one thing we don't really know, is where they might have gone in both the NFL draft and in rookie drafts versus that next year. But yeah, in Devy leagues, we should be taking advantage of that. If the perception is that Bryce Love wasn't good enough or David Sills wasn't good enough, then maybe we should buy those guys a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see once like the Devy season gets in full swing of where Bryce Love goes and compared with those 2020 running backs that many see as like the more talented players. But obviously, Bryce Love's going to be producing NFL points a lot quicker than those 2020 running backs. All right, let's finish off some overall Devy talk with our freshman too risky. Obviously, I talked about how the larger the league, the more need to draft freshmen are. But let's kind of stick to more of the more traditional Devy league that most people play in. In a, let's say, 24 to 36 players enter each year, do you think freshmen are too risky? Are they worth the risk because they, you know, can explode early on? What are your thoughts on freshmen?
I don't really think they're too risky because in most cases, I don't think they're being valued all that highly. If you're talking about a, like you said, a two or three round Devy draft, in most cases, freshmen are not going to go, maybe not even in the first round, but usually not in the top five or so. So if you're spending a second or a third round pick, or if you're in an auction format and you're spending a dollar like you did on N'Keal Harry a couple of years ago, then the only thing you're really using is that roster space. So because of that, I don't think they're too risky, but in general, it's a major challenge to predict what an 18-year-old kid is going to do in 3 years or 4 years, if that's the case, or maybe even longer in the NFL.
Yeah, and one of the things that I kind of struggle with, that even on the scenarios where I've hit on a freshman, it's still a waiting game. You're still waiting 3 years, possibly 4 years if they stay till your senior year, till they make even score a single fantasy point. And then traditionally you're not really starting, you know, and maybe rookie running backs are the exception there, but rookie wide receivers, rookie quarterbacks, you're not really starting them on a weekly basis in your fantasy league. So if I draft N'Keal Harry in 2016, I might not start him on my fantasy team until 2020. So that's a long waiting game to play, especially, you know, and I don't really play this game because I feel like I play in most like safe leagues that not the Scottfish safe leagues, but leagues that don't fold, basically is what I'm saying. So I play in leagues that don't fold for the most part, so I don't really worry about that scenario. But that is something that people take into account, is like, oh, why am I worried about 4 years from now? Because the league might fold by then. So, yeah, speaking of leagues that might fold, you know what's not going to fold? My friends at the FFPC. Let me tell you about our friends at the Fantasy Football Players Championship, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. Fantasy draft season is heating up, and the FFPC has a format to suit interest and budget. Whether you like best ball or superflex or classic managed leagues, there are drafts daily with entry fees starting at just $35. Jump into a slow or live draft today. If you like Dynasty, and I know you do because you've listened to this for the last 34 minutes, the FFPC has almost 200 active Dynasty leagues with entry fees starting at $77 and going up to $2,500. Here's something incredible. Not a single Dynasty league has folded in 8 years. New Dynasty leagues are forming right now with startup drafts launching on a regular basis. Don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. You see, I kind of tried to channel my inner Matt Williamson with a certain shave ad that he does, where he takes like the most awkward time possible to try and talk about shaving.
That was very Williamson-esque.
There you go. All right, let's do our game for today, and it's a little bit of it's a twist. It's not rookie of the vet. It's actually Devi of the vet. You know, I don't think there's any singing on any of your podcasts, Ryan. I think you might need to add that element.
No, like, who's
the singer? Would it be George? Would it be Scott? Which one of your co-hosts is the best singer?
Probably Franco, right? It's got to be Frank.
Oh, Frank's got some pipes. We got to know that. There you go. He probably sang it in New York. All right, I'm going to stop before we get unsubscribed. Here we go. All right, our first Devi or the vet is going to be Justin Herbert of Oregon, quarterback, or Mitchell Trubisky. Which of these would you want on your Dynasty roster today?
Oh, man, this one you gave me some layups here, I think. This one is an easy one. Mitchell Trubisky, no doubt about it. Obviously, we already know the draft capital. He was the number two overall pick a little over a year ago. And while he certainly had a rough rookie season, like I mentioned earlier in the show, it looks like everything's pointing in the right direction for the Bears offense. With the addition of Allen Robinson, Trey Burton, and the other weapons that they've added, Anthony Miller, of course, and then just the changes on the coaching staff are the big reason for the optimism there. Herbert is a guy I like in my Devi auctions, Superflex, kitchen sink leagues. Obviously, going to be targeting Herbert if he's available. But I mean, we're not sure if he's even going to be a first round pick. I've tracked some 2019 NFL mock drafts, and you know, you can say what you will about the validity of those, but only about half of those have Herbert predicted as a first round pick, let alone going in the top two like Trubisky did. So, knowing the situation, knowing the draft capital, this one's an easy one for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's quite as easy as most because I made up the question, so I want them to, you know, sound a little more interesting. But I think it also takes your risky, and we've kind of talked about how Sam Darnold could have the Jared Goff career arc of absolutely terrible in year one and then, you know, turn around in year two with more weapons. Mitchell Trubisky is also on that career arc of pretty bad in year one and adding a bunch of weapons in year two. So I'm not sure Trubisky's as good as Goff in year two, but he's certainly going to have a very solid improvement. He's going to be giving you points. Specifically, if we're talking one quarterback, Herbert doesn't really matter. So let's say that we're talking Superflex here, and Trubisky is going to be giving you points this year. So I think it's kind of close, but Trubisky is the safer option just because of the fact that, you know, he's in the NFL right now.
So is Herbert your top Devi quarterback right now?
It'd be him or Tua, but yeah. I think comparing Tua to any – like guys who have a starting job right now, I'd take the guy who has a starting job.
Right.
All right. Let's go to our next one, the running back position. And I'm actually surprised because you said I gave you layups. I think this one's actually pretty close. And it's Bryce Love, who we talked about as a returning senior from Stanford. And it's Tevin Coleman. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, they're not all layups. No, not I didn't mean to say that. This one is pretty close because I'm not a huge fan of either player, actually. I think there's a reason Love went back to school, and we heard reports that he's kind of a student first and really values his education, which is kind of rare to see with these student athletes, but it's a good thing, obviously. But other than that, I'm just not sure he's ready for the NFL. I'm not sure he's going to be ready for the NFL a year from now. He had a really strong season in 2017, but he also battled injuries basically every game. Every time I watched a Stanford game, he was back and forth from the sidelines to the huddle and cramping and stretching and lots of seemingly soft tissue injuries.
Right. When he was done stretching, he had a 20-yard run like every single time.
That is true. That is true. I don't know when I look at his size, when I take into account all of his this injury history and these nagging injuries that he had when he finally got some playing time in 2017, I just don't know if he's suited for the NFL, honestly. Tevin Coleman, we know the story on him. He's a year away from free agency. Everybody expects him to be kind of the Jerick McKinnon, except he's already carrying a lot of value, quite a bit more than McKinnon was. So, I mean, if he lands in an ideal spot like McKinnon did, and you talked about Williamson, my buddy Matt suggested maybe Le'Veon Bell is gone and Tevin Coleman lands in Pittsburgh. If that were to play out, we're talking about Tevin Coleman as maybe even as a top 10 dynasty back. So I'm going with Coleman here. Again, not huge on either guy, but I just, as great as Bryce Love is as a college player, I'm not sure he's going to be even half that successful in the NFL.
Yeah, we'll certainly see how things play out. I think one thing Love will benefit from is that the 2019 running back class looks pretty poor. And from a dynasty perspective, it's going to be pretty much all wide receiver all the time. So Love could be the RB1, and the RB1 could go off the board at like 108 in rookie drafts. So we'll see how that goes. But with Tevin Coleman, he's a guy that he's a spot start slash great best ball option, while he's still with Devonta Freeman. And then assuming he leaves Atlanta and goes to a spot where he ends up being the lead back, even if it's a 1A, 1B, instead of being the 1B, 1A, it's certainly going to be an improvement. And he'll, I'd say worst case, gets valued around that 108 range. So if I can get similar value and get the production right now, I'm certainly going to take that. So I guess we're going to continue on with we've both gone vets so far. Let's see if this changes our mind. This is going to be A.J. Brown, who many consider the 101, maybe 102 of rookie drafts next year. Or Jarvis Landry.
This is the toughest one for me. I love AJ Brown, and I do expect him, like you just said, to be a top two pick. Really was happy to see him break out in his sophomore season a year ago, and even though that Ole Miss program has gone through some rough times, that he lost his quarterback, of course, and a few of his teammates with the off-field violations and scandal that they've got going. I honestly don't expect any of that to slow him down. I'm expecting another big season and do expect him to be part of that 2019 class as a top draft pick. With Landry, we know what we're getting for the most part. If there is a question, it's can he still see the same amount of volume in Cleveland that he did in Miami? It seems like there's a lot more mouths to feed. We don't know exactly what that offense is going to look like. And then when it comes down to it for me, I think if it's this time next year and I've got the 101 or 102, would I trade that for Jarvis Landry? I don't think I would. So I'm going to go here with the Devy. I'm going to go AJ Brown.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to agree here. I'll also take AJ Brown. And when you talk about this time next year, will you be willing to trade the 101, 102 for Landry? That's very unlikely. If you're making this trade, if you're trading A.J. Brown for Jarvis Landry today, you're doing so with the hope or the assumption or, you know, just trying to take the risk out of the fact that Devy players are risky. They get hurt. They, just don't live up to expectations. They go lower in the draft than many fantasy people expect. So if you're making this trade today, you're kind of hoping A.J. Brown ends up more in like the 106, 107 range, in which case that'd be a win for Jarvis Landry. But If you think that he's going to be 101, 102, I think you have to side with Brown here.
Yeah, and Landry's kind of a weird case too, because even though he has all this production, he's been a top 24 wide receiver basically his entire career. And I think he was wide receiver 4 last year with just a crazy amount of volume, and finally found the end zone a lot in 2017. Despite all that, he's not really valued as an elite wide receiver. And if he does have really any kind of drop off in Cleveland, whether it's due to less volume or whatever the case might be, I just hate to see what might happen to his value then. Basically, he's performing as an elite receiver, but not valued as such. So once he does take that step back, his value could really plummet.
Yeah. As soon as he has like 70 catch for 900 yard season, Jarvis Landry's going to get like become like a ninth round startup pick.
he really could. Maybe not that far, but I mean, he's never, I don't want to say never, but I can't remember him ever locking into that like top 24 dynasty ADP. So he's always been a third or fourth rounder, even though he's put up big numbers. So we could definitely see him in the sixth, seventh round range next year.
All righty. Let's go with our next one and our final one. And it's going to be the tight end position. And it's going to be Noah Fant of Iowa or Trey Burton of the Chicago Bears. Now, I put this one on here because I know you're a Burton guy, and because I kind of had a feeling you might side Debbie if it's really close, like we kind of did with the Jarvis A.J. Brown situation. What are your thoughts, Burton versus Fant?
Yeah, this one is close for sure. The quarterback and running back, you took it easy on me, but these pass catchers are tough decisions. I mean, you have to love everything you see about Noah Fant. Big, huge guy, like 6'5", 240-ish. But he can run, he can catch, he can pretty much do it all. And I've seen some reports that this offseason he's working on his blocking, working on his route running, kind of those next steps in refining his game. That's great to see. I talked about the 2019 NFL mock drafts, and you don't see tight ends showing up in the first round of the NFL draft very often, especially when you're talking about a year out, because it is generally tough to predict that position and how the NFL is going to value those players. But Fant showed up in the first round of several of those mocks as well. I do love Burton. You're right about that. I think he's my tight end 6 or 7 in Dynasty. So even though he's relatively unproven, I'm a big fan. He's had to kind of bide his time there in Philadelphia before he made the move this offseason to Chicago. I think he's in line for a big role there, of course, based on the payday they gave him and again, the changes that they've made to their offense. And we know the story with these young tight ends. It generally takes them 2 to 3 years to really make an impact in the NFL. Evan Engram is a rare commodity to see a guy come in and score as a top 12 tight end right away. In fact, he's the only one that's done that since Gronkowski, I believe. So as much as I love Fan, I think he'll be a first round rookie pick in dynasty drafts next year, but it's not just a 1 year wait with him. It might be a 3 or 4 year wait until he really is ready to be put into starting lineup. So I'm going to go with Burton here, but it is very close.
So this will be our one disagreement. I'm going to side with Fant, who is considered the tight end 1 in Dynasty right now. 16.5 yards per catch in 2017, 11 touchdowns. That's production you just don't see at the tight end position. For the most part, college tight ends don't get used. I remember back in the college DFS days that people were like, all right, like what's the absolute least I could spend at the tight end position? And that was the optimal strategy. So, but not really have anything to do with Dynasty, but so with Fant, I think that I agree with all the mock drafts and all that. He's going to be a first round, NFL draft pick, maybe early second at the worst. And then that kind of puts him in that late first, early second of Dynasty rookie drafts. So I don't see a scenario where I put Burton as a late first round pick next year. I'm a fan of Shaheen. I think that he's going to get some targets in that Chicago offense. And that Chicago offense went from an offense that was like targeting Kendall Wright a bunch of times to now that it's kind of spread out a lot. There's going to be Anthony Miller, Allen Robinson. Shaheen and Burton. So I think that there's a case to be made that it's going to be difficult for Burton to find consistent targets for fantasy. So in that case, I'm going to, you know, shoot for the upside with Fant. But it's one of those scenarios that if Shaheen just doesn't end up being relevant fantasy and Burton ends up being the receiving tight end there, I can certainly be proven wrong pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair case. I do think, just looking at this current rookie class, I do think Burton is worth in that range, late first, early second. And if he has a big year, he could be, again, if we're talking about next year's draft picks. But yeah, that's a fair case. I do love Noah Fant. I'm excited to see him this year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this, we can wrap up with kind of a spin towards our, you know, Devy conversation to begin with. What are your thoughts on investing at tight end? Do you just rarely do it? I know the OJ Howard was selected in a few Devy leagues, but for the most part, I've never really seen Devy invest. Oh, I saw Goddard taken in a few leagues last year, but for the most part, I don't really see tight end taken. Do you ever dive into the tight end pool, or are you kind of just wait until they're rookies for that?
Yeah, I typically wait until they're rookies. I think it is hard to predict tight ends, how they're going to be used. A lot of the tight ends that do put up numbers in college, maybe they're just a product of their offense. And I guess the good thing for us as fantasy players is we're starting to see the NFL kind of ignore blocking. You know, the thing for so long was if a tight end can't pass block or can't run block, then he's not going to see the field. That's kind of going away a little bit in some cases, which is a good thing for us. It'll make things a little bit easier. And guys like Evan Engram and we've got a couple this year who are not well known for their blocking, but are still expected to get on the field pretty quickly. But overall, yeah, I'd just rather take my shots on receiver, running back, or if we're talking about a super flex league, then quarterback as well. And tight end, just really just like it does in most fantasy formats, kind of gets pushed to the back.
Yeah, and one thing to talk about the blocking thing, this kind of more just as a Tampa thing, but I heard last year that people were knocking OJ Howard because of his blocking. Like, he's one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL. And so people were like, well, Cam Brate's going to get the receiving targets, and now Howard's going to be always the one staying back. For me, if a tight end is a good blocker, they're going to be on the field more, which is good for their fantasy value. So yeah. I thought that was amusing as a knock on Howard. Oh, he's too good of a blocker to be a receiving tight end.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I guess when you are down on a player for whatever reason, you'll kind of find any reason to knock them or to I don't know, to put them down, I guess.
Yep, for sure. All right, Ryan, I'd like to thank you very much. And before I sign off for the show, I just want to remind you to rate and review the RotoViz Dynasty Tradecast on RotoViz Radio on iTunes. It's good stuff. And Ryan, like, thank you for coming on. Anything you need to plug?
No, I don't think so. You know where to find me.
Well, then I'll do it for you. You have a fantastic new duo of George Kritikos and Ryan McDowell on the Player Raider podcast. I've listened to the first two episodes, both very excellent. Bull Rush, one of my favorite podcasts on the planet. I'm forgetting one. Oh, Dynasty Blueprint with Matt Williamson, which I mentioned earlier. So there you go.
Thanks, Nathan.
Yep. All right. Everybody, thanks for listening, and have a great night.